Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Richard Hoffman's An Environmental History of Medieval Europe is a scholarly textbook that examines medieval Europe through environmental history and social ecology. Rather than treating forests, fields, animals, disease, climate, and rivers as background conditions, the book asks how natural systems shaped human choices and how medieval people altered the ecosystems around them. Published in the Cambridge Medieval Textbook Series, it is designed for students and historians who want to connect social, economic, technological, religious, and ecological questions. Hoffman covers broad themes such as the end of Roman environmental systems, Christian ideas about creation, agricultural expansion, local resource management, urban pressures, epidemic disease, and climate variability. Its purpose is not simply to add nature to medieval history, but to show that human communities and environmental processes formed a single interacting system. The book is especially notable for challenging assumptions that pre-industrial Europe was environmentally untouched or naturally balanced. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, social ecology as a framework for reading medieval Europe. A central contribution of the book is its use of social ecology, a framework that treats human societies as partly cultural and partly natural systems. Hoffman does not present medieval people as standing outside nature, nor does he reduce their history to environmental determinism. Instead, he emphasizes interaction. Human institutions, beliefs, technologies, labor systems, and property rules affected ecosystems, while climate, soils, disease organisms, animals, and water systems constrained or redirected human behavior. This approach changes the scale of medieval history. Political collapse, urban growth, agrarian expansion, and religious thought are not viewed only as human events. They are also embedded in energy flows, biological productivity, and material limits. The value of this framework is that it explains both intention and unintended consequence. Both. Medieval farmers, lords, monks, townspeople, and rulers often acted for immediate subsistence, profit, defense, or devotion, but their actions could produce erosion, habitat change, deforestation, pollution, or new disease conditions. By making feedback central, the book shows why environmental history is not a decorative supplement to medieval studies. It is a method for understanding how society functioned in relation to the non-human world. Secondly, the making of traditional European landscapes through medieval land use. Hoffman stresses that medieval Europe was not a pristine wilderness waiting for modern transformation. By the Middle Ages, many regions already bore the marks of long human use, and medieval expansion intensified those changes. Agricultural clearances, settlement growth, drainage, grazing, woodland management, and field systems helped create landscapes later regarded as traditional or natural. The book highlights the importance of biological production grain fields, pastures, vineyards, orchards, forests, fisheries, and livestock were not only economic assets but ecological interventions. Converting woodland to arable land changed habitats, soil exposure, water movement, fuel availability, and relations between humans and animals. These changes were often driven by population pressure and the need for calories, rents, and marketable goods, but they were also shaped by local knowledge and inherited practice. Hoffman's analysis is important because it avoids a simple narrative of destruction. Medieval people could degrade environments, but they also developed durable systems for using land over generations. The resulting landscapes were hybrid products of ecological conditions and human management. This helps explain why medieval environmental history must consider labor, tenure, demography, and technology together with soils, vegetation, and climate. Thirdly, resource management, property rights, and the limits of sustainability, the book gives sustained attention to how medieval Europeans managed local ecosystems, especially resources that required repeated use rather than one-time extraction. Fields, woods, pastures, rivers, mills, fisheries, and common lands all involved rules about access and obligation. Hoffman connects these arrangements to larger questions about sustainability and the tragedy of the commons, but he treats them historically rather than as abstract models. Medieval communities could create customary controls over grazing, woodcutting, fishing, and water use, yet such controls were always vulnerable to demographic pressure. Elite power, commercial demand, and conflict among users. This makes the book useful for understanding sustainability as a social process, not merely a technical outcome. A practice might be ecologically durable under one population level or market condition and become destructive under another. Tenurial rights also mattered because ownership and access shaped incentives. Lords, peasants, monasteries, towns, and craft producers could define resources differently as subsistence base, revenue source, legal privilege, or communal necessity. Hoffman's treatment avoids romanticizing medieval localism. it recognizes practical ecological knowledge while showing that institutions often managed scarcity, competition, and risk rather than pursuing conservation in the modern sense. Fourthly, disease, climate, and natural forces as historical agents. One of the book's major interpretive moves is to treat natural forces as active agents in medieval history. Hoffman discusses disease and climate not as isolated disasters, but as processes that interacted with settlement patterns, nutrition, trade, animal populations, and social vulnerability. Epidemic disease, including the broader problem of pathogens moving through human and animal communities, demonstrates that biological systems could reshape demography, labor relations, and social expectations. Climate variability likewise affected harvests, food security, migration, and the stability of local economies. The significance of this approach is that it complicates explanations based only on politics or institutions. A crop failure was not simply a weather event, because its effects depended on storage, landholding, transport, poverty, and social response. A disease outbreak was not simply a biological event, because its spread and consequences depended on mobility, density, trade, and living conditions. Hoffman therefore shows that medieval people lived within changing natural systems they often only partially understood. The book is careful not to portray nature as an all-powerful cause. Its stronger claim is that historical causation becomes more accurate when environmental pressures are integrated with human decisions. Lastly, medieval ideas about creation, animals, technology, and urban environments. Hoffman also examines how medieval Europeans thought about the natural world and how those ideas intersected with practice. Christian teachings about creation, human dominion, sin, providence, and the moral order influenced attitudes toward animals, land, and natural events, but belief did not produce one uniform environmental ethic. Medieval thought could encourage care for creation, acceptance of hierarchy, practical exploitation, or fear of hostile nature, depending on context. The book links these mental frameworks to material systems such as technology and towns, mills, irrigation, mining, building, fuel use, waste disposal, and urban water needs all show that medieval technology had environmental consequences even without industrial machinery. Towns concentrated demand for food, timber, water, and energy, extending their ecological footprint into surrounding countrysides. At the same time, medieval people developed practical skills for working with water, animals, soils, and tools. This topic is important because it prevents a split between ideas and actions. Hoffman shows that environmental relations were shaped by theology, law, habit, craft knowledge, market needs, and technical possibility. Medieval environmental history, therefore, includes both symbolic meanings and the physical infrastructures that made daily life possible. In conclusion, an environmental history of medieval Europe is best suited to students, instructors, and scholars of medieval history, environmental history, historical geography, and pre-industrial economies. It will also benefit readers interested in sustainability who want a longer historical perspective than modern industrial case studies usually provide. Its practical value lies in showing how to analyze human societies as ecological actors even when they lacked modern science, fossil fuel industry, or contemporary environmental language. The book helps readers ask better questions about land use, resource pressure, disease, climate, technology, and belief without forcing medieval evidence into present-day categories. Compared with many medieval textbooks, it stands out because it places forests, animals, pathogens, soils, rivers, weather, and energy at the center of interpretation rather than treating them as background. Compared with broader environmental histories, it is distinctive for its close integration with medieval institutions, religious ideas, agrarian structures, and local management practices. The book is not primarily a narrative of catastrophe or a celebration of traditional harmony. Its strength is its balanced account of adaptation, exploitation, uncertainty, and unintended consequence. For readers seeking a rigorous introduction to how medieval Europeans lived within and transformed their environments, Hoffman's work remains a foundational and unusually synthetic guide. If you would like to support Richard Hoffman, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.